All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
You are now listening to the Coding Behind the Wheel podcast.
Yeah, you can insert the video right here. Yeah. Yeah, I think I put a quote from him from that interview that maybe you can recap for people here in a minute, since I'm working a little light-handed here at the hotel. But I wouldn't say the two seasons were a disaster. I mean, in 2016, I think he was just really overwhelmed running his own program. I think it was a lot more than he, maybe planned for, bargained for, whatever the case may be. Him and Huddy didn't really seem to work out. He didn't get one top 16. I don't know if it was a matter of them not being able to get him the car he needed or him not being able to communicate with those guys. I would call that year a disaster. He left. I will give him some credit, though. You know, it's not like he stuck around. He was helping Kelsey Rollins in her Pro 2 season. He kept himself involved. And you know, now he seems to be working in that Drift Cave 14. I don't know. It's just fun kind of watching him go out there. I mean, he's really kind of putting it up to some of the big dogs, and it's kind of almost reminiscent of Matt Field back when he was in the Highlighter 14. You know, if you remember his battles with like Daigo Saito and that exact car, you know, in a way. So I think it's a good testament to Matt Field, too. He's probably not going to get as much credit, but it is, you know, it is a Drift Cave car. It's his old pro car. So I think that's really neat. And then, yeah, I think that about covers it. I mean, if he can keep that up, I mean, he could have a top 10 finish. And, I think if anyone asked Pat Gooden at the beginning of the year, would you like to be in the top 10, I think he'd be pretty happy with that. So, okay, yeah, please do. Yeah, and it was cool. You know, he was actually out at Hyperfest this weekend. I saw him and talked to him for a little bit. It's kind of cool. He's helping out supporting Adam LZ. So it seems like he's just keeping himself involved in no matter what way. He's like, I appreciate that, you know, while he's being a Formula Drift Pro 1 driver, he's willing to work on a Pro 2 driver's team as well. I think it speaks a lot to his character, and I think, you know, that's probably a template for some other guys who really want to be in the sport. Like, I don't think just because you're driving a Pro 1, you're above, you know, wrenching on a – yeah, well, you're not above wrenching on a team, and you're not above changing tires. And he was driving the truck around, you know. Like, I don't know. I think that says a lot to his character for people that don't know him. And if you never get the chance to meet him, I think that kind of tells you everything you know without him saying anything. I agree. For sure. Yeah, I mean, we don't really need to harp on it. I think one of the biggest issues or concerns was the fact that in Orlando, there wasn't one upset. So it was, you know, top qualifying guy, one. And it was like, okay. So, you know, Atlanta, we had a lot of mix-ups. There were a lot of upsets. There were a lot of really good battles. There was some funky qualifying positions. It just was kind of refreshing to have a competitive and interesting top 16. Or top 32, sorry. I got into a lot of arguments on the Maximum Driftcast group. If anyone's in there, you can join there. And there's some interesting talk about drifting going on all the time. But here's my thing. I think Kanguchi's kind of out of line, I think, with his comments. I think it's kind of disappointing for him to come out like that. I'm sure he's under a lot more stress. From what I understand, he's running his own team now. He's entitled to his opinion, obviously, but you know, if you rewatch the run, I think there's a couple things. Number one, he goes two or three tires off several times in that run. So he's not exactly coming from a position of strength with the argument. I think the other issue then is there's some fault maybe on the Formula Drift live stream or the camera crew or whoever you want to put that on, that Vaughn has a lot of wheel speed, produces a lot of tire smoke. And the problem is when you come up the hill, if you watch the clip, he is like kind of full lock. He crosses the finish line and then there's a smoke cloud and you can't see anything. And then, I don't know, 2 seconds later, second and a half later, you see him, he's spun out over onto the other corner. Now, there's been a lot of people, I think, egged on by Kanguchi saying, like, well, Vaughn wasn't in control and this and that. Here's my thing. I think you can't blame the judges because I think everybody wants the judges to be clear and fair. And I think even though you may not agree with it, I think the problem is the judges can only judge what they can see. I think you can see Vaughn. You see Vaughn cross the finish line. He doesn't, at that exact moment you see his car, he's not over rotating. Now, he gets out onto the berm, which with weather can be beyond slippery. So it's possible as he, you know, went onto the berm more and more, he, you know, rotated the car. It's possible that, you know, they're driving opposite the road race line going up the hill too, right? So the berms actually come down. So he could have cut a tire. And if either of those situations happen once he's crossed the finish line, like some third exterior motive were to happen, like he drops a tire after the finish line, you can't hold him accountable for that. And the problem is the judges are asked to judge what they can see and what happened in the run. I don't think we want to get to a situation in this sport where the judges are inferring things that they don't know happened. Does that make sense? I don't want Formula Drift to get to the point to where they're like, well, you know, Travis Reeder hit Vaughn, but Vaughn, we think, might have, you know, already messed up. And so then let's just say they didn't hit each other, then Vaughn would have won, so Vaughn wins. Or how, you know what I mean? Like, in whatever weird world that, like, you start assuming, well, if he hadn't made a mistake here, then we think he would have been fine. Once you open that Pandora's box, I think there's just so much more room for people like implementing their own biases. And, you know, there's listen, I get it. I think it's a tough deal. I also think if the roles were reversed, let's say, and there was an underdog battling Vaughn and that guy spun out, let's say Jeff Jones, right? I think nobody really doesn't love Jeff Jones. He's an underdog, he's a low budget team. Let's say Jeff Jones was in the lead and Frederick Osgood or Vaughn or Forsberg, one of the top dogs, James Dean, was chasing and Jeff Jones won. I think if you put the shoe on that foot, I don't think anybody would be calling for some, you know, injustice that he wasn't marked off. In fact, I think if Jeff Jones was said to have spun, I think people would be losing their mind too. So I think there's something just to consider with, you know, obviously there's a lot of emotions involved in racing in general, but, you know, it is what it is. You know, if there were different camera angles, I think maybe we could have a different conversation. If I thought they made a mistake, I'd be one of the first people to accuse them. I think I have a long track record of not putting up with formula drift judging when I don't agree with it. But I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of a non-starter in the situation those guys were in. First, I want to say, if you haven't listened to me and you did an interview with Travis Reeder, I think it's like a three-part series. You should definitely listen to that. I think you'll gain an enormous amount of information about this car. I think what they're trying to do. I don't know. I was kind of blown away. I think it seems to me like there's a lot of budget behind this, and I think these guys seem really determined. I think, I don't know the owners. I've never really talked to anyone from Napoleon. I didn't actually get a chance to see Reeder at Road Atlanta. He was too busy big dogging in his VIP trailer, I think, to hang out with me, which I understand. But listen, it seems to me that I think the program is a success. I actually was told by somebody recently that them not running at Long Beach, someone that at least is more familiar with the team than I said, that them not running in Long Beach was the best thing that ever happened to that team, because it was just the controversy, the way everything came together, the interest in the car just really, you know, he was saying, I think with one of their sponsors, it was like one of the most trafficked things that that company had ever posted. So it seems to me like it's going well, but I think there's a life cycle to this PR hype. You know, if they need to come up with something at some point this season, I think Travis needs to win a tandem battle. I think he needs to show that the platform can be semi-competitive, because, you know, right now they've got the donut media video. They've got all this attention. I think Travis is a really talented driver. I don't want to discredit his ability, but he's obviously doing something no one's ever done before. So I think there's these elements of difficulty, but he's qualified. So that was like the first checkbox. Can this thing qualify for a drift event? You know, the track allowed him to drive. He performed. So it's like he's got the first kind of like weight off his shoulders, but it's like now we really need to actually – I mean, he did get a tough draw in tandem, but, I mean, as far as an American muscle shootout went, Chelsea Zanofa made that car look pretty bad. big shout. Right. That's interesting. I hope, you know, it's a scary track, so, you know, hopefully they can make it out of there. I know. He did cut his teeth in Evergreen, at least, right? So he's got a little more experience than some. Yeah, I understand. Okay. Number five. Yeah, I don't know if we need to make a long story about this, but I think it was worth mentioning just because I think most people should know or probably been told, if you're ever going to go to one Formula D event, I think Road Atlanta is the one. If you're coming from like out of country or, you know, you're just going to do a, you know, Saturdays for the boys trip, I think Road Atlanta is where you need to be. I think the energy's there. However, to me, I was very surprised with the rain, with the bad weather, with the delays. There were a lot of people in the stands, man. I wouldn't have been there. You know, I would have at least been watching the live stream from my car. How about that? You know, so I just, to me, I was like, man, you know, the rain didn't really, I mean, it looked full. I mean, Jared, I think for the final or the final four, asked everyone to turn their, you know, like flashlights on so they could do like a shot. And there were a lot of light. I mean, there's just a lot of people there. And so that was kind of my thing. Sure. You know, they battled in Long Beach in the final. OD won. They battled again in Atlanta in OD won. But the battles are great. And I think that Forrest is not going to let Odie beat him forever. And I think he lost by margins, small margins. You know, it wasn't like Odie swept him off the floor. And I think when I think about, like, the great rivalries and battles of Formula D, a lot of them are, you know, it's, you know, I get really excited when I see Vaughn and Chris line up, but they've both been in Formula D since 2004. You know, I get really excited when Pollock and Vaughn or Pollock and Denofa, get up, you know, especially because, you know, all three of those guys going to have big personalities. There's a few battles just here and there that I like seeing some guys come together. I really like Osmo and Forsberg as well, but once again, kind of a battle. So if you look, Odie right now is still in first. Forrest Wang's in fourth, which I think is would be his career best. I'm sure he's so hungry to beat Odie. Odie robbed him of his first win. You know, he's five podiums, I want to say, with no victory. That's tough, man. That's a lot to think about at night, keep you up at night. So Forrest seems like he's kind of running on a really tight budget this year. I think he's sized down his career a little bit, but man, he's a first place. I mean, he's ranked higher than both the Wardhouse cars, you know, as far as the sillies go. So I'm just excited. I hope that they keep pairing each other off. I hope that maybe Forrest can keep Odie from winning the championship. I just want this rivalry. I think it's a good one. You know, Forrest has skills a little low. Is flashy, he does big flicks, and Odie is like the polar opposite of that. Odie is like a little more conservative, has, you know, a real basic look to the car, is very engineering driven, the car's higher, very methodically thought out. I mean, he owns a suspension company. So it's just, I like seeing the contrast of the two cars, how they're styled different, they drive them different, and they're both doing really well. So it's like, to me, that's like the most impressive part about drifting is that there's not one formula to win. And I think when you look at drag racing, when you look at road racing, I think that's one of the things that drifting has an advantage to. Like in drag racing, there's one way to win. You make your car fast. You sacrifice everything to make your car faster. You spend more money. You lose weight. I mean, you can as a driver, but you know, you take weight out of the car. Like that's there's not a lot of room for your own personal expression, I guess, in a way, you know. You, I guess, could compete in different classes. If you like all motor, you can build all motor and things. But to me, I think that's one of the special things about drifting. You can take the same car in the same class, but do it completely differently and still be competitive in two ways. I know, man, those guys. So I think Pro 2 is kind of interesting. There were a lot of guys in Orlando that were, you know, on the podium, got a lot of points, who couldn't even qualify in Atlanta. Obviously, there were some issues. You know, once again, it was weather at hand. So I think a lot of these guys weren't prepared for these new issues. And then you also had Kendrick Meyer, right, who didn't get points on the board in Orlando and then got second place in Atlanta. So the interesting thing about Pro 2 is it's only four rounds. So points matter a lot. You know, when you win one event, you already have 25% of the total amount of points that can be gained in a season. You know, 350 points, realistically, somewhere, you can probably break 325, 330 points. You're probably going to win a championship. So one win already has you maybe, let's say, 33% of the way to a championship. But it kind of all fell apart here because Trent Beecham got knocked out early. Josh Robinson won. He had gotten knocked out early in Orlando. Kendrick Meyer went from a zero in Orlando to a podium. Now, in third was Garrett Denton, who kind of also did the same thing. It's kind of crazy. It's all over the place. So it's a lot to process. There's a lot of drivers fighting for 16 spots and then going to the podium. I think we go on a pretty long break now, so we've got nothing going on until St. Louis, which is a mile away. But, you know, sometimes I'm hyped on Pro 2 a lot, sometimes I'm not, but I will say Atlanta was not the prettiest. Josh Robinson rose to the occasion for sure. I think Kendrick Meyer, former U.S. Drift kid, really impressed me as well, even though he lost to Josh in the final. And I'm just curious to see. I think it's kind of wide open, to be honest. I think there's probably, let me glance at the championship right now, there's probably, there's 16 guys within 100 points of the championship, and I think if they could pull up two podiums, they could easily win. Or, you know, a victory in a third place. So I've never felt like the championship's been this wide open this late, halfway through the season. I know. It is, and, you know, I think he got really lucky. I don't remember which battle now. You could cheat and look at Formula D for me, but, you know, I've been delayed in the airport all day, so I have not studied my notes, unfortunately, but a flat tire. Yeah, that's right, Osmo. And so he was probably 2 seconds away from just totally, you know, not even having that bat. He caught that it was flat in his warm-up, and they changed it, but I don't know, man. I don't know if different guys put that chassis together or it's just, you know, his time's up. I mean, I think if you can make it 16, 20 rounds in Formula D without a technical issue kind of pulling you out of races, it's on borrowed time. You know, these cars are only – they can only take so much. And even though he's kind of rebuilt the same chassis and the same motor setup and clearly his team knows what they're doing – you know, sit anybody guess, and it's racing. And so I think the important thing, I think, to kind of close this out is it obviously is not in his head that much. You know, he was able to come back. He performed well. And there's something to be said for that. And, you know, he's not quite in the – I mean, he's 103 points back in the championship. He's not out of it. He's got a lot of work to do. He needs to start winning, which he didn't also successfully do in Atlanta for as well as he did. But he's back on the podium, and I would be really scared if I was one of the guys in front of him because I think he's hungry. He's going for him. Ooh, big shout. Sure. So, I mean, this is kind of something I kind of concocted because I was a little short on points for this round just due to the weather and all the kind of wonky circumstances. It did end up becoming really interesting, though. The thing about it is I think it's a record mention, too, because in your head you think Jim Bennett won 3 races in a row and then lost a top 16 battle to Chris Forsberg. However, in 2004, like I mentioned, there was only top 16. So to win an event was only 5, you know, rounds. It was shorter than if you had to win top 32. So Odie was actually really close to beating that record, which is probably a record that most people never thought would be beat.
again, you know, in modern form of the drift. If you think about it, in 2004, Sam Houbinette was in a, you know, stock Dodge Viper racing against kids who street drove their car before. And, you know, now you've got factory teams, you know, big million-dollar teams. And Odie's not even really one of those super well-funded teams. So I think it would have been cool. I think it would have been a nice feather in the cap for him. He came close. I just thought it was worth pointing out. I think it's huge for the team. I think regardless of if you're a Ryan Turk fan or you're not a Ryan Turk fan, I think it's pretty incredible to watch a team that was so down on their luck. They totaled a car right out of the gate. Didn't even make a tandem battle. They totaled their car in practice. And, you know, 60, 70 days later, they're on the podium almost beating, pushing Frederick Osborne, I think, to the limit. I actually wouldn't have been upset if I saw that final battles one more time. So I think it was very close. I think it's great. It's a great story. It's a great boost of confidence for him. I think it potentially makes him a – maybe not a championship player. He's a little behind in the points, but someone that can make things interesting, maybe with that confidence, take out a James Dean or an Odie Bacis or a Forsberg in Wall and really shake things up. And – we actually had already previously recorded this, and it messed up. But when we did, you mentioned that you almost think his new car is better. Yeah, and, you know, I think one of the things to consider is that chassis was tired, man. It was old. It had been around since the birth of the FRS, so I'm sure it wasn't perfect, you know what I mean? And I agree with you. I think just from the eyeball test, regardless of how I think Turk and his team feel, the eyeball test is this car looks better. And, you know, maybe they put more effort into it. Maybe it's like, you know, this car is kind of like 1.2, version 1.2. It's not quite probably 2.0, but I'm sure it's at least 1.2. They probably fixed a few things, even in a rush, maybe that they were like, hey, like, let's not, you know, cut this here. Let's do this. So you just never know, but I agree with you. I don't think you're off base thinking the new chassis is better, and I think that's the confidence he really needs to finish the season strong. I don't think we're saying that. I just think the point really comes from the fact that they totaled the car 60 days ago and he was in second place. Agreed. That's what I said. Even if you don't like Ryan Turek, if he's not your favorite driver, I think that's impressive for any team at any funding level to turn that around that fast. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you know, people have their favorite driver, right? Like, people are like, I only like Von Gittin Jr. because, you know, I love Mustangs, or I only like Frederick Osbo because I only like Scandinavian people. I don't know how people gain their fandom. I don't know. Maybe people who hate expensive sweatpants. I have no idea. I think when the weather came, I think I immediately put Frederick Osbo as a 50% chance to win the event. He's just, you know, he's like the
I want to use this comparison, but he's like kind of like the Ayrton Senna of Formula D, I think, when the rain comes. You know, he's just got that – he's got that weird balance. I mean, for anyone who is a big F1 fan, they kind of cover it in the documentary about his life, Senna, if you want to watch. But he just – there was something about when the rain came that he just could – you know, one of the problems in the rain is you have to brake a lot sooner. You know, you have to get on the gas slower. And he just had this amazing ability to have the car function so close to the dry conditions when no one else could figure out how to do that. And I kind of feel like that's how Frederick is. He just, you know, you heard a lot of the drivers, if you watch the event, say, we want the track to be, you know, we want it raining so the track is completely wet, or we want it to be dry. Right, where you're pedaling it, and then there's grip, and then you're pedaling it. And I think Frederick Osbo is a driver that is not as concerned with that. He doesn't seem to be – I mean, I'm sure it's still challenging for him and more difficult, but regardless of what the weather looked like, he's performing at the same level. And I think you can clearly see, I think just by looking at what happened in Pro 2, that a lot of people do not have the ability to perform the same in various weather conditions. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think huge props to him. I think he deserved it. I think he's probably really sour about last season losing the championship by 4 points. I would be. And so I think he's coming for everybody. And I think if the rain gods come to New Jersey, he's probably going to be more excited than most. Well, that's an interesting thing you bring up. And I, you know, at Hyperfest, a lot of the Pro 2 drivers were there. And we were having a lot of discussion. And I think a lot of people underestimate how much of a mental game Formula Drift is. And there's a lot of people who can drive really well. There's even a lot of guys that can drive really well in qualifying. But it's a big difference when you're on TV. You know, the pressure's on you. There's 10,000 people watching you, and it's not as easy. And I think a perfect example of that is just look no further than Adam LZ. I think what we've seen with him is no one disputes that he has talent. Well, some do, but they're idiots. He has talent. He's probably driven, I would say, in the top 10 people in the world probably in the last year. You know, he's out at events in Australia. He's doing this pro-am, that pro-am. He has the seat time. But the thing is he's stepped into Formula Drift, and what he doesn't have is that he doesn't have experience with that mental challenge yet. I think that's something he has to figure out. And I think the other reason why I say there's a huge mental play here is I think if you look at some of these drivers that become – immediately successful in drifting, they have some other experience where they were mentally challenged in a big way. Look at Al Conadale. He came out of the gates flying. He was also a professional jet skier. You know what I mean? Like, he already understood that mental. Yeah, he was. So, you know, there's a lot of guys that have transitioned from like a you know, BMX standpoint. You look at AJ Musk, he's in Pro 2. He was an Olympic snowboarder. So, like, I think, you know, AJ might not have as much, let's say, raw talent as a guy like
Adam LZ probably doesn't have enough seat time. But I think those two guys are perfect yin and yang. I think AJ probably has much more of the mental game. I'm sure the pressure of being in the Olympics and training for four whole years to compete for 5 minutes, you know, that's like a mental game well beyond Formula D. So I'm sure when he's in his car, he's cool. He's like, oh, this is, you know, if I mess up, I can race. Whereas in the Olympics, like, I messed up and I just wasted the last 4 years of my life. There's, for a lot of those guys, there's not even a chance to go back, you know. So I think it's interesting. The longer I've been around Formula D, I really look to drivers' mental state, because I just think it's a big thing. It's really a big thing in all motorsports. I've gotten to know a lot of these drivers well, and, you know, it's just an interesting aspect. It's something I also think a lot of people don't talk about. So I kind of like to, like, speculate, and, you know, I could be way off base with some of these guys. I could be wrong, but it makes it maybe a little more fun, just a different perspective for everybody. Yeah, and I think before we close, I think I can give a great example of this. If somebody wants to see a visual representation of what I'm talking about, or the closest thing you could do, go pull up Formula Drift Pro 2 qualifying from Atlanta. It started raining, and so you get a sight lap. There was more than one driver, I won't say any names, you can go watch it for yourself, that I would say their sight lap, if it was judged, gotten them into the event. You know, they, like, pedaled down the track and felt everything out, and they did fine, you know. And then 5 seconds later, it's like, okay, now you have to perform, right? Now it's put up or shut up time, and they couldn't do it. You know, overshot the turns, spun early, got too much throttle. And that was literally the difference of 10 seconds, you know. And you have to imagine some of those guys in their head did the sight lap. They're like, oh, I did good. Now I need to step it up. When really they just needed to repeat what they did, but they were, like, you know, sitting there, okay, it's time now, let's go. You take off down the hill, and then what you just did is out the window, and then next thing you know, you're sitting at home, not racing, or in a kitty litter. And I get my party on. I mean, I was in an airport all day. I only flew for about 30 minutes today, unfortunately. Also in the wrong direction from my home, but that's a whole other story for another day. I know. What a country.